This week on Countdown to Infinity, we look at Iron Man 3, the first movie after the Avengers takes some classic characters and storylines and tears them up right in front of your eyes. It's like being unable to look away from a car crash. This is Countdown to Infinity, and this is Iron Man 3. Welcome back to Countdown to Infinity. This is episode 7. It's Iron Man 3. Oh, shit. Oh, God, why are we doing this? Unfortunately, David cannot be here today. So I'm joined by our very own Iron Man, Mr. Matty Stark.
Hey, how you doing, Eamon? You right?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Not too bad.
Are you excited to talk about Iron Man 3?
Yeah, I am. But just as a little footnote here, I haven't seen Black Panther. So if you dare say one thing, reference anything back, I will. This will be pointless because I will make personally sure that you never live to see Infinity War.
Oh, God. Wow. Oh, shit. Okay, I really
can't. And you'll never see me coming.
Great reference. I liked it. I didn't like The Mandarin. What I will say is Black Panther is a good film. But we're going to roll it back a few years to 1999. To Switzerland. Which actually is a nice callback to the very first Iron Man film where Ho Jinsen says that he met Tony once and Tony was far too drunk. And we see that at the beginning of the film. And I quite liked that.
Nice little cameo coming back there, tying it back into the early movies, which is always great.
Yeah, it was a positive start.
Bit of Eiffel 65, just to make you absolutely sure you know which era you are in.
God's sake, that fucking Blue DVD song, man. So annoying. But it's here that we meet Aldrich Killian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but a lesser version of him.
He has some sort of physical disability, and he has a t-shirt that says AIM on it. Advanced Idea Mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
That'll come into play later on. And he meets Maya Hansen.
Yep, now, also a key character for later in the movie.
Exactly. Now, if you are a comic book fan and you're a key Iron Man fan, you will already recognise some of those names in particular. And after this, it takes us right forward to the present day, and Tony's experimenting on a new armour because this is just after the Avengers. And I think that's a really important moment to talk about, really, because the Avengers was a huge film.
Massive,
if you've listened to our previous episode, you already know that it was a key part of a lot of Marvel fans' love for the universe.
It's the first time that we start to see all of those individual movies come together and amalgamate as one, which is what everyone's been waiting for.
The future after that, it's uncharted territory. It's like, if you've done the Avengers, what the fuck's going to come next?
Exactly.
And it's Iron Man 3. Oh, God, honestly. To begin with, I did like it. I thought up until there was a certain point where I just went very downhill. But where they introduced the Mandarin, and they introduced this threat of the Ten Rings as a terrorist organization in a modern world, which, you know, the MCU is trying to fit into.
Yep.
I think that's a very good translation.
It's very clever. It's very relatable for the general public, especially with lots of things going on, you know, 10 years previous to that. Osama bin Laden, the Twin Towers, all this kind of stuff. These Eastern terrorist organizations that are coming to get everyone else.
Yeah.
And they're bringing it home for everyone that way.
Mm. And I think the Mandarin was, to begin with anyway, a great parallel of, like you say, bin Laden. And that's what gripped me at first. I was like, okay, that's a nice translation for a grounded MCU. It's an interesting direction for the character that, for comic book fans, he's very mystical.
Yeah, this is something that I felt I wanted to personally touch on. I like the way they went about it to relate to a bigger audience. But for me, Tony's he's very scared of magic and these kind of mystical things. He's very grounded. He's logical. He's that kind of guy. So when it's something that he can't explain or he can't understand and get his head around, he's very fearful of that. Mm. As you've seen in Avengers and the aliens and all of this kind of stuff. He's scared of that shit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think that's mainly because he's a man of science.
Yeah.
He likes to know the inner workings of everything, really. Whereas mysticism is not something he can control, which is something I'm looking forward to in Infinity War with Doctor Strange, to say the fucking least. Oh, Sherlock Bros, to say. Oh, mate. Have you seen the comic book panel where they do the facial hair bros?
Yeah.
Come on. I fucking need that. I really fucking need that. Come on. Going back to the PTSD side of things, this film adapts a couple of storylines, one of which is Demon in a Bottle.
Indeed, yeah. Like, Tony's got some serious issues in this movie. You can clearly see the effects of New York taking hold of Tony, and he's starting to lose it. From that very first scene in the diner where he's signing the autograph for the kid on the colouring page, and you get this sudden burst of, you know, heartbeats going, spinning imagery. And he's, you know, you can tell he's starting to space out and he has to run out. And, you know, he jumps into the armor and Jarvis tells him that everything's all cool and that he's had a panic attack.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Rhodey there being like, you know, this isn't a good look.
Like, no, I mean, he's literally like pretty much on the floor at this point in front of a crowd. I mean,
yeah,
his public rep's going to go down. And I think it is an interesting way of bringing vulnerability to the character, especially in a world that is trying to be a little bit more considerate of like mental health, for example. But at the same time, it was a very strange way to deal with Tony Stark. I don't mean that in an offensive way. I more mean that 5 minutes ago we had Tony getting pissed and clearly having a one-night stand with Maya Hansen. And yeah, then we get this. It's a huge like dichotomy between the two.
The way I see it is making that kind of jump was a mistake because it didn't kind of have this traversal in between. It's kind of expecting you to go from this flashback scene, essentially, insert Avengers here, and then going to this. So it's assuming that people, you know, people might be watching this movie and have not seen the Avengers yet, which is why would you? But big no-no, but there are people that will have done it.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, you do have to think for the parents, they're just taking their kids or whatever, or if it's coming on the TV on an afternoon, say. But it, like you say, there is that huge gap that it's just like, fill in the blank. Exactly. So I don't know. I think the good intentions were there. I don't think it fully flowed well with the rest of the plot, unfortunately.
Yeah, if you jump forward a couple, you know, through Act 2 and 3 as well, there wasn't any development in it. He just basically had two or three panic attacks exactly the same, and that was it.
Yeah, there was no difference. And it was always, like you say, the exact same style of panic attack.
Yeah.
It was just, ah, drop to the floor.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people know that there are different types of panic attacks. Yeah, I appreciate what they were trying to do, but it was just really clunky. It didn't flow well with the Extremis storyline.
No, either. Not at all.
Because, obviously, like we say, that wasn't prevalent in Extremis. Not a lot of things in this film were prevalent in Extremis.
They were trying to do a little bit cooking pot of stuff, trying to make the best out of everything.
Yeah.
And
because
short on a few.
Oh, more than a few. I mean, because very shortly after the PTSD scene, we are introduced to Aldrich Killian.
New and improved
Aldrich Killian. He's slick. He's got a suit on. He doesn't need a walking stick anymore.
Nope.
He's had a glow up, so to speak. And he's flirting with Pepper. Oh, and to be fair, there's a moment you see her, she's like, oh, damn. Do you know what I mean? It's his big brain, as John Favreau's Happy Hogan puts it. Do you know what I mean?
Showing her a big brain.
God.
And when he can't use FaceTime properly.
I liked Aldrich Killian to begin with. I was like, oh, this is an interesting take. But you already knew he was going to be a villain because of the AIM connection.
Yeah, and he's already ahead of his time, seeming as in Extremis comic book, 5 minutes in, he's already shot himself in the head and he's not the main character. So they're already jumping into, oh, we can write whatever we want for this character because he's dead in the comic book.
Yeah, I feel like it was a little bit like, oh, it's Guy Pearce. We can't have him kill himself. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, that would be a bit of a dodgy take. Because for those not in the know, Extremis mainly deals with Maya Hansen.
It does, yeah.
I think it was obviously partly a misdirect for something that we'll get onto later on. And like we say, a lot of this film bastardizes Warren Ellis's very, very good comic.
Very,
one of the best
good
Iron Man comics. Tell us a little bit more about that, because you're a big fan of Extremis.
I am a big fan of Extremis. So for me, when I see things on the screen that are not played out the way that they are in the comic books, it is always a slight disappointment to myself, because I want to see those big screen versions of what's going on the pages. So, you know, first 5 minutes, Aldrich Killian has killed himself. He's not even there. The whole story is focusing on Maya. You know, you've got your main villain is a guy called Malin, who's basically a street druggie who's taken the Extremis formula, and he goes into this weird cocoon thing. There's a lot of blood puking up everywhere.
It's pretty gross,
dark, visceral. And I understand why they thought that they maybe couldn't use this for the screen, because it maybe will jump the age rating up a little bit. But I don't know how you could kind of do this PG or 12, you know.
Yeah.
It is very gross. I wanted to see that, but I understand from their point of view that they need to make it relatable for a wider audience if they want to make the sales. Ultimately, it's all about money at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I mean, with Disney's involvement as well, it's very hard to get away with stuff that would quite honestly fit in a bloody David Cronenberg movie.
Yeah.
Because Extremis is a pretty gritty storyline. I mean, Tony gets the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, this is another thing. When he's facing up against Malin, the first time, he is literally on the brink of death. I wanted to see that kind of vulnerability to Iron Man. You're like, he's in a metal suit. He's got all of this stuff going on. He has Jarvis to help him. He's pretty much invincible.
Yeah.
It's not often. Even in the past two Iron Man films, you don't see him get...
like, tragically hurt.
Tragically hurt, yeah. To the point of almost mortality.
Yeah.
And... you know, in the comic, he is literally on the brink of death. Mm. Like, Malin beats the fucking seven shades of shit out of him. Like, he is trapped inside of his armor. Yeah. All of his bones are broken. He's internally bleeding.
If you're having a metal suit, like, collapse in on you,
yeah,
that metal's going to go inside you. That's going to, like, break the skin, probably cause some, I don't know, just a minor bit of internal bleeding. Just a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, and it's a very pivotal point in the Extremis storyline where Tony has to decide, because, you know, he is going to die. Mm. He basically makes a quick decision that, hey, inject me with an Extremis. I can mm-hmm. take it and I can live. Fortunately, Deus Ex Machina works out for him. and he is fine. Yeah. And then he goes on to develop the Extremis armor / the Bleeding Edge armor.
Which we've already seen a glimpse of.
I think
it's going to happen. we do see a little bit of that in Iron Man 3 with the Mark 42 suit, where he...
the dermal implants. Yeah, he can draw the suit to him. It's got a very... the beginnings of what we're looking at.
Yeah, sowing the seeds. For me, what I noticed was the Extremis and Tony side of things is largely given to Pepper.
Yeah.
Now, we've already said in previous episodes that Pepper Potts is a great character. She's a well-founded character that stands on her own two feet. She runs Stark Industries because she's the right woman for the job and not just because she's a love interest. And that is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
However, the way that they do it in Iron Man 3 mm-hmm. is she is a damsel in distress that's on the verge of exploding. Mm. What the fuck? Honestly, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. So after Tony, you know, publicly invites the Mandarin to his house mm-hmm. for, you know, for dinner, you know.
Tea and cupcakes.
Tea and rockets. So that was a bit of a...
Stupid move
in hindsight. Captain Hindsight.
And let's think about this as well. He's got the Avengers on fucking speed dial. He's got S.H.I.E.L.D. at speed dial.
You would have thought that if his, you know, Miami mansion is getting blown to pieces, that might maybe trigger an alert from the Avengers.
Helicarrier, maybe? Yeah. That'd have helped. Probably. Where the fuck was Nick Fury? Didn't have his eye on that one, did he?
Not at all.
Bell end.
So, yeah, you get this scene where Maya comes around to the house, like, you know, I need to talk to you immediately, blah, 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 blah. Next thing you know, there's a trio of copters advancing that aren't television helicopters. Suddenly, boom, racks of rockets start firing at his mansion. You know, the first one hits and you get this awesome visual, beginning of this awesome visual scene where Tony throws the Mark 42 onto Pepper.
Yeah.
Encasing her to, you know, essentially save her.
Yeah, and it's a pretty awesome scene to begin with.
The second I saw that, I was like, yay, rescue!
Yeah, man.
And I was like, we're going to see Pepper do some cool fucking stuff.
And she starts out well. She saves Tony.
Yeah, so she saves him back, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he's about to have some rubble fall on him, and she jumps in front of him and protects him. And I was like, oh, shit, rescue is happening. Now, for anybody that isn't aware of what rescue is a weapons-free suit that Pepper wears and, you know, does what it says on the tin. She's the one saving civilians.
She's basically an MMORPG healer, if you want to put it that way.
You're not wrong. But the armor goes onto her. She saves Tony.
And he asks her to get Maya out. That all happens. And you're like, cool, we're going to see some... like, maybe Pepper's going to go and take the fucking copters down. This is going to be great. Mm-hmm. You know, even though that suit's not rescue yet, she's, you know, she can still do
the,
a little
the
bit.
The bare bones are there.
30 seconds later, Tony rips the armor off her and takes it back. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Plus, like, he's got suits down below.
Yeah.
We'll get to the majority.
Appreciate he can't do the same thing. He's just built Mark 42. He can't draw them in like that. But just get a Jarvis to fucking eject one.
Yeah. Or control all of them. Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe. You should have the house party protocol at the fucking house.
Oh, God.
But we'll get onto that later.
It does annoy me. I think visually and thematically, like, destroying his mansion was quite cool.
It was one of the most visually appealing scenes of that movie. I loved it. It was very dramatic, very... there's a lot going on, but it makes you generally fear for Tony, safety, Pepper, safety, everyone involved, you're like, shit, what's going to happen?
Fuck. I mean, I think it's largely because at the time, this was meant to be Robert Downey Jr.'s last film.
Yeah.
His contract was up. He hadn't renewed it yet. So they were trying to throw away a lot of the, the Iron Man mythos that they'd created. And it was kind of like, oh, fuck, like, they're getting rid of everything Iron Man.
Yeah, yeah.
So from a plot point of view, it was kind of cool. And I did kind of like when he's buried underwater and the hand ejects and then pulls him
up.
That was kind of cool. And then he's unconscious and flies off to Rose Hill, Tennessee, where he picks up a sidekick.
God.
Yeah.
You would have thought in that situation that Jarvis would have gone, oh, shit, the mansion's just been destroyed. Maybe we shouldn't go on that pre-selected flight path to Tennessee.
I'll just take him to a helicarrier. It's fine.
Just take him over to the other side where Pepper and Maya are. Maybe,
Or maybe Stark Tower.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe in New York. That might have helped.
Might have.
Oh, God. He lands in Rose Hill, Tennessee. He's by himself. He breaks into a garage. Not before leaving a quick message for Pepper on the Iron Man answer machine. Yeah. he picks up a stray little sidekick called Harley.
Yeah, Harley. So Tony's now daddy daycare.
I know it's meant to be this theme of Tony growing up, Tony becoming a father, Tony being the father that he never had and all this.
Yeah.
But it just makes me fucking cringe, dude. It really annoys me. Worth noting that when Matty was just doing a bit of fact checking before we started the show, one of the first things that comes up on Google is a Tony Stark and Harley fan fiction. Now I don't want to fucking
I don't want to press on that at all. I don't want to know where that's gone.
The internet has some fucking depraved people on there, so it really would not surprise me at all.
Internet is dark and full of terrors.
Oh, God. Fan fiction is dark and full of terrors. We're not generalising, we promise. The Harley storyline is just... It's unneeded, it's unnecessary, and it fucking annoys me.
It's a plot point for one more panic attack.
Yeah, yeah.
And for him to have a child tell him, everything's going to be fine, you should just do this. And he's like, oh yeah, shit, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, yeah. There is the one moment where he takes him to the quote-unquote suicide bombing.
You mean Detective Tony Stark,
Tony Stark. I do kind of like Detective Tony Stark, a little bit.
I just want him to put on a Batman cowl and just scan the area. Because that's basically what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, there is the previous scene where he does the 3D projection of the crime scene at the Chinese theatre.
It felt like I was playing the Batman Arkham games.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I'd not thought that. Oh, God. Iron Man Arkham Knight.
I would pay money for that.
Yeah, do you know what? So would I. Because the Iron Man games they made were shit.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he's in Rose Hill, Tennessee, and he comes across some more extremist-powered soldiers.
Yep.
So there's Savarin.
Kind of took it as their version of Malin.
Yeah, yeah,
kind
much.
Of, because they didn't include Malin. So they needed to have some badass sidekick, extremist guy.
But the more interesting one
mm-hmm.
is Ellen Brandt.
Yes.
Now, she is the Homeland Security agent, supposedly, that is also an extremist soldier. But the thing that is quite interesting is that she's actually related to Man-Thing.
She is, yeah.
I liked that tidbit.
Really, really, very small. You got to know your shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little detail. It kind of shows that Kevin Feige isn't dicking about with these Easter eggs.
He's not.
As we know,
you can throw them in. The people who know, and anyone else, it goes over their head. So you might as well drop them in.
It doesn't matter in terms of the plot. It's just another character that happens to be there. I'm starting to wonder if we are going to get some new man thing. Because in Thor Ragnarok, when they get to the Grandmaster's Tower, there is a man thing head as part of
the
totem.
Yeah.
So
he's a previous champion.
Come on, man thing. Make your appearance. After that, there is the lovely scene where Harley has the cricket. God. That Tony had given him in case of bullies. Oh,
yeah.
It sounds so
stupid. Do you remember what I said about bullies, kid?
And he basically blinds Savarin, and yeah, that's it. It's fucking stupid, and then Tony just drives off.
No, well, he just is like... He has
Don't say it.
Okay, I won't say it.
Is it because we're connected?
I was actually about to say that he blasted him in the face after he blinded him.
Well, yeah, there was that too, but...
It's
how they
got away. Right. But
do you know what I mean?
Because we're connected.
Sorry, just throwing up because I'm cringing here. It's so stupid, honestly. But let's get back to the Mandarin, because soon after, Tony Stark stumbles on this terrorist. This
he does,
renowned
yeah.
worldwide
after he
terrorist.
Goes a little bit MacGyver, because mm-hmm. he's yep. the mechanic, and you just build something.
Fuck.
We get a montage.
A montage of Tony building things.
In Lowe's and, like, home Lowe's and garden, just going around and buying questionable items that you
Fertilizer.
Should seriously call the police. Yeah. If you're buying all of that stuff at a checkout, there should be a button that you press to call the authorities.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a scene from Fight Club where he tells him how to make bloody bombs, isn't it? You know, he makes a shock hand glove thing, some handy little grenades that are in Christmas baubles, because this is a Shane Black film and it's got to be set at Christmas.
Yes.
Oh, fucking hell. It's just stupid. He makes his way into this lavish mansion. And there is a man in the bathroom.
There is.
It's Ben Kingsley.
Are you sure you want to go here? Because I'm going to go on for ages.
I'm going to have to. I'm going to have to introduce it at some point, man. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to disappoint, but I'm going to have to.
Trevor fucking Slattery!
The Mandarin, as we know him, is not real. He's an actor hired by AIM called Trevor Slattery. I really liked the idea of the Mandarin being this Osama bin Laden type figure, because it's, you know, I just said, modern MCU, it's fine. To just rip the rug away like that and be like, haha, lol, no, he's a pisshead actor from London whose King Lear was the toast of Croydon.
This is the point that I almost walked out of the movies. That was the one and only time I have almost ever walked out of a movie.
Bloody
I was
awful.
Like, I'm going to stand up, drop my mic, I am done. I ended up saying it was an Iron Man movie.
Yeah,
I do love
kind of
Iron Man. I did end up staying. Mm-hmm. But to say that was the only time that I almost ever walked out says a lot.
It does.
About how shit I thought that decision was.
I mean, the Mandarin is a classic comic book character.
He is. He's one of the only reoccurring villains for Iron Man. They have a cat and mouse back and forth thing throughout the whole thing. You know, he was introduced in Tales of Suspense 50 in 1964. Originally back then, you know, this was like 40, 50 years ago. And ever since then, they've been chasing each other, almost getting one another for the rest of the time until now.
And they turned him into a fucking drunk actor.
Turned him into a joke.
Yeah, literally a throwaway joke.
Yeah.
Why did Kevin Feige sign off on that?
Well, they knew they fucking made a mistake, because after the movie, they had to go ahead and make the one shot.
All Hail the King.
Yeah, All Hail the King, which was nice.
It was cool.
It was nice. I liked the fact that they'd listened to people and knew that people were upset. Mm. And they wanted to make it a little bit more ambiguous now and be like, so there is still a Mandarin and he is out there, but you just haven't seen him yet.
Yeah, and it was kind of nice to bring Justin Hammer back for a brief time. What is interesting though is that Sam Rockwell wasn't on the main set for All Hail the King. He was across the other side of the country filming something else, and he filmed it literally against like a blank wall, and they got him a costume and they just spliced the scene together.
That's amazing.
It's great. The Mandarin, not so great. Fucking hell, why did they do that? Because the Ten Rings has been part of Iron Man since the first film. Because Ten Rings in the comics is a huge plot point, if you want to look at it that way.
It is, yeah. It was, you know, it was very first teased in Iron Man 1 when that was what he was
fighting against
and investigating.
And they're the ones that who had him imprisoned as well.
Yeah.
Whereas in the comics, why don't you tell us a little bit more about the Ten Rings?
So in the comics, the Ten Rings are actually rings. Mm-hmm. So the Mandarin, he was essentially born to a Chinese mother and an English father. It could be the other way around. I don't quite remember. Essentially, his parents died. He was left the family fortune. And eventually, he was you know, exiled from his home and in China because he couldn't keep up the tax payments and essentially all this kind of shit. Anyway, he stumbles across an alien spaceship.
Standard, as you do.
And happens to find inside these 10 rings, which are powering. When he adorns these rings, they give him mystical powers. And they are the 10 rings. And this is, you know, the power that he gains to fight, you know, rule China and fight against Iron Man.
So, it was a great way of updating it to make it this terrorist organization. Because at the time, the MCU was a little bit more humble, wasn't it? We hadn't been introduced to the cosmic side. We hadn't been introduced to the spiritual side.
No.
So it was a nice way of just honouring the comics and giving it a fresh take.
It's not to say they can't still introduce that now, because they've had All Hail the King, and we know that the Mandarin's still out there and in some form. Now we've had Doctor Strange, and we've had a little bit more of an insight into the mysticism side
and
of things.
Because we've had Guardians of the Galaxy.
And Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, it does leave it open to have... I mean, essentially, the rings being an alien technology and this mystical stuff, as with the stuff in Doctor Strange, it's still all science, but it seems like magic to people who don't know that you know, some people's magic is another person's science.
Exactly.
You know, if we were to jump in a time machine and go back 50 years of our, you know, 50,000 years of our iPhone, whatever, and show someone, they would be like, oh, burn the witch, shit.
Like, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, this is, because there are always rumors of Iron Man 4.
Yeah.
Now, that's just going to be an ongoing thing, probably until Robert Downey Jr. dies, let's be honest. Now, would that not be a great way of ending his time as Iron Man?
It would, to have the Mandarin do him in.
Mandarin.
I would have the proper Mandarin and have him be the cause of Tony Stark's death.
Yeah, I mean, be a great way of rectifying that big mistake.
It would, yeah, it would go a little way to pleasing some people.
But that's pure wishful thinking.
It is.
Part of the Mandarin's plot is to make this huge grand display of murdering the president.
Indeed.
In the War Machine, or sorry, should I say, Iron Patriot armor, because they can't do it just half-assed, can they?
No.
They've got to go full propaganda. It's the War Machine suit decked out in red,
but
white, and blue.
All they did do is just paint the War Machine suit.
War Machine Rock 68. Just saying. I mean, to be honest,
they could have made a few changes. They literally gave it a paint job.
It was literally that. I mean, first saw pictures of it, I was like, oh shit, that's kind of cool. I liked it. But that was because I just read the arc of Norman Osborn with Iron Patriot. And I was like, really? That's the route they're going? Okay.
Yeah.
Aight.
Just chucking in Norman Osborn with no introduction.
Yeah. It wasn't Norman Osborn. It was Rhodey. But it's that scene where the president is strung up and he's literally wearing essentially the American flag.
Yeah. And they're setting up barrels of fucking oil below him that they're going to ignite and burn the flag.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to fly a bald eagle behind him while we're at it? Jesus fucking Christ, that was so on the nose, it hurt. I mean,
surprised it wasn't set on Independence Day.
Fuck's sake.
But it would never work because then Shane couldn't have it at Christmas.
Yes, it really annoyed me. Iron Patriot is, in the comics, is a very interesting figure. It is Norman Osborn. He's an evil Iron Man at this point.
Yeah.
And then with this, it was just, he was a joke. It was like the Mandarin again. Just reduced to a couple of throwaway lines. Like, oh, War Machine was so much better. Do you know what I mean? It was just, I was disappointed. What I wasn't disappointed with was the relationship between Rhodey and Stark. That was developed further and I liked it.
It was, yeah. It was very good. I really enjoyed the dynamic between them two in this movie. So props to Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle for the win. That brings us on to the house party protocol. Now, as we mentioned earlier, we think this should have happened straight away because basically, Tony has a huge armory of suits underneath.
He's been filling his downtime with a lot of Lego. Well, his version of Lego, anyway.
Just building suits.
Just building stuff.
Just multi-billion dollar suits. And for fans of the comics, we do get to see some near legendary suits.
Yeah,
so Silver Centurion, Heartbreaker, and then a couple of interesting ones.
Yeah, so everyone was going on a mad one, being like, oh my God, we get to see the Hulkbuster. Yeah. It isn't the Hulkbuster. It's Igor. It's a subterranean suit, but everyone is mistaking it for the Hulkbuster. Mm-hmm.
Get it
right.
It's
the beginnings. It's nodding towards it.
That scene is cool because you do see all these suits. Does kind of feel a bit wasted and frivolous because Tony's just jumping between each
one. He suddenly gained some sort of superpower aside from his suits, because that's Tony's thing. He is the Batman of the Marvel Universe.
Yep,
is the guy with money who, because he has money, gets to be a superhero because he can make himself strong, he can make himself powerful. But suddenly he's turned into fucking René Dujeux, French fucking parkour specialist.
Yeah, he's like leafing off things. And bear in mind as well, there is a scene before the house party protocol where he stands up, see where all these like enemies are and shit, and he sees nothing.
Yeah.
But yet when he's throwing himself off buildings and just hoping that an Iron Man suit's below him, he suddenly knows where everything is. Like, what the fuck? It's so strange.
I think it is obviously a lot of Jarvis influence going on.
Basically,
there.
Jarvis is a superhero. Tony Stark is just the meat bag that's inside the suit, let's be honest.
We get, you know, a lot of extremis henchmen.
Yeah, that just appear out of the woodwork.
Jumping about, super powerful, breathing fire.
Mm-hmm. But where have they all been previously?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Why were the henchmen guarding that big mansion where the Mandarin is? None of them were extremists. They were just booted, suited, and tied people.
Do you not know there's one guy who goes, guns. They're all so weird. I hate working here.
Yeah, I love that bit.
It's funny, but it was so good. Where's the extremist guy?
Yeah.
Also, so the thing that annoys me is that during the initial scene in Malibu, so there's these three helicopters.
Yep.
And yet they've got this army of extremist henchmen.
Yep.
Why not just send the army of extremist henchmen and be like, haha, lol, fuck you.
Punch the house to death.
Just burn it down.
Yeah, it's true.
They already have these resources.
Yeah, they can
touch
fucking metal structures and make them melt.
Yeah, that would be a lot less expensive than helicopters and missiles. just throwing it out there. You've got a really bad business model, Aldrich Killian, I'm just saying. Oh, sorry, should I say the Mandarin? Because it turns out that he's the Mandarin.
Yeah, apparently before we get the whole one-shot thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to undo that.
It's almost baffling. It's like, it's A, whitewashing, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah.
Because he's got these fucking dragon tribal tattoos all over his fucking chest. What the fuck was that? Honestly. And then he starts breathing fire.
Yeah.
And this is the explainer for his sudden glow-up, or literal glow-up.
Yeah, glow-up.
And, yeah, he's breathing fire and basically trying to kill Tony, which, fair, okay. By this point, I'd kind of given up and was just like, where's the post-credit scene? This is fucking shit.
Hurry up.
I just kind of lost my shit with Guy Pearce breathing fire over things, really. It just looked like me after I've had a hot chili. Let's throw it back to my Hansen and I'll cut it in place. There is a twist, another twist, aside from the shitty Trevor Slattery twist, that my Hansen is the one working with Aldrich Killian.
Yep. You get this lovely little hotel room scene with Pepper and Maya. Having a little heart-to-heart, having some girl time. Room service comes.
It's Aldrich Killian.
Aldrich breaks the neck of the guy.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah, he just walks up behind like, snap.
Hey. Hi, Mom.
Turns out that Maya was working with Aldrich the whole time.
Yeah, and she was trying to get Tony on board.
Basically, because she wants to earn some pee.
Fair. I mean, you know, the whole trying to get Tony on board thing, I understand. Fair enough. She'd already got some help from him in 1999 with the little cardboard cutout thing, the equation on it.
He drunkenly kind of almost completes her work on the back of a
name
tag.
Which is, to be honest, just standard Tony Stark, really. That is quite funny. only Tony Stark could get absolutely trashed and write the equation for an experimental super soldier. As you fucking do. Why is it whenever I get drunk, it's never that fucking glamorous?
Oh, this is what you're doing wrong. Down a bottle of tequila, wake up in the morning. I have solved world hunger!
I fucking wish. But moving on, we get to the Housepipe Protocol. And we get to Pepper Potts having extremis. And her flameproof fucking bra. Basically, she falls into a fiery inferno, 5 minutes later crawls out of it, and her clothes are still intact. Now, I'm not saying that she should have been naked, that's not what I'm saying at all. But why the fuck were her clothes not burnt? They weren't even singed. What the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So strange. And basically,
I kind of get it. A lot of the extremists are wearing outfits and they're heating up and breathing fire and none of their clothes are all burning off.
Yeah, but then that begs the question, is there a portion of AIM that is just dedicated to making flameproof normal fucking clothing? Do you know what I mean?
Like, probably.
There's just some like old granny in the background like, oh, let's see if this burns. Will it burn? Oh no, you wear that duck. Go on, off you pop. What the fuck?
It's more likely to be some child labour sweatshop.
Oh, maybe that's the sweatshop we see that fucking Iron Pastry goes to.
Yeah, they're making, that's what it is.
That's what it is. We just sold it.
You just cracked that one.
I have. Ooh. I'm proud of myself now. But it just begs the question why Kevin Feige signed off on this entire fucking film, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's just terrible. But we need to talk about our man, Stan the Man. He does have a cameo.
He does.
It's a bit pervy.
A little bit.
It's a little bit grim. He is judging at a beauty pageant on a screen when Tony's trying to hack into a satellite. And he holds up a 10 when looking at a bikini-clad lady.
Indeed, it was short, it was sweet.
Sickly sweet?
Sickly, yeah, a little bit sickly
sweet. That's a bit grim.
Yeah, when Tony's in a van with Gary, his greatest fan.
Oh God, that tattoo. Yeah, he's on the screen behind him. It's okay, it's not groundbreaking, it's nothing hugely impressive. It's just a bit of a pervy old man, really. So now that we've talked about Stan Lee, we need to talk about another integral part of any Marvel film. It's the post-credits scene, Matthew.
Yes.
Now, it's a bit shit. Let's get it out of the way.
It's not one of those ones that is leading you to some important part of a future movie. More of a ha-ha-ha-ha.
Yeah, and I think that's what was more disappointing about it, because we just had the Avengers.
Yeah.
And this was around the time that everybody had become aware of post-credits scenes, in Marvel films anyway. So everybody was like, oh my God, what's it going to be? What's it going to be? Is it going to be something like Avengers, Cap related? Like, what the fuck? No. Tony Stark is on the couch talking to Bruce Banner, and it turns out he's been relating this entire story to him.
Yeah.
And that's why he's narrating at the start of the film.
That is part of his monologue.
Yeah. That's it.
That's it.
And Bruce Banner says,
I'm not that kind of doctor.
Yeah.
And just basically has been sleeping the whole time.
Right. Okay. What the fuck was the point in that? Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm more than happy to see Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner anytime.
Yeah.
But that was just shit.
They wasted an opportunity. It was a throwaway moment.
Yeah. Although, when I was watching this back, I did have a thought. Bruce Banner has grey hair in this scene.
Yeah.
But then in future films, he does not have grey hair. Are we saying that Bruce Banner is a dye job? Like, frequently? Because that's weird.
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture the Hulk dyeing his hair. Like, with the gloves, like, Hulk dye. So, let's talk ratings. Bearing in mind, you nearly walked out of the cinema.
Yeah,
true. What are you going to give it out of 10?
For me, I'm going to go for... Because I am such a big fan of Iron Man, and there's a lot in there that I wanted to see that I didn't.
Mm.
Obviously, granted, I probably wasn't going to.
Yeah.
I'm sitting around probably the 6, 6.5
okay.
area. Yeah. If I didn't like Iron Man so much, it probably would be lower.
I mean...
I have to add about 2 on for my love of Iron Man.
Just because it has Iron Man in it. Yeah, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. just automatically gets just like a base level 4 no matter what film it is. Just,
true.
It's got Robert Downey Jr. where you've at least got a 4. Personally, I kind of sit between 5.5 and 6.
Mm.
Mainly because of that Mandarin twist. Because it's just shit. It's lazy writing more than anything. And
I personally think it's too high. It's about 7.2 on IMDb.
What?
Rotten Tomatoes gave it 80%.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
I think it's sitting way too high.
Maybe we're just too negative.
Maybe we are.
It really makes me question when they hired Ben Kingsley, who is a phenomenal actor, award-winning, phenomenal actor. What was that boardroom pitch that they said to him? Like, so you're going to be playing this sort of like terrorist allegory. It's going to be this legendary comic character. Everybody's going to know who you are as soon as you're in that trailer. Everybody's going to lose their shit. Cool. Yeah, nice one. Oh, nice one. By the way, small thing. You're not going to be the Mandarin. You're going to be a pisshead from Croydon. Like, really? Did they have to pay him more to convince him to do it? Because that's the only way I could see it happening. It just fucked me off. I'm giving it fucking 5.5. I'm going with 5.5. I'm going to have to.
Going 5.5?
5.5.
Okay, cool.
I have to. I can't redeem it. I'm sorry.
Cool.
I'm
yeah,
sorry,
like
Kevin
I said,
Feige.
I'm kind of, I guess, without my extra points for Iron Man being in the movie, sitting around the same area. Maybe a little lower even. If I'm 6.5 and I take the 2 off for Tony Stark, that leaves me at 4.5.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Fair dues. I'm so glad that I've been able to rant about Trevor Slattery.
Me too.
Because now I don't have to ever do it again.
I have had this pent-up aggression since 2013. It's all coming out on this podcast.
Oh, God. Yeah. So that's been us. That's been our rant on Iron Man 3. There are things we liked. We did mention them. It's fine.
We did.
Tweet us what you thought of the film. Because, like we said, it's kind of polarizing. Everybody else seems to like it. Maybe it's just us.
Yeah.
We know that Dav doesn't like it, so that's fine. We've got our own trio. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Thank you very much for listening. You can tweet me at Eamon Jacobs, or you can tweet us at Hero Direct.
Or you could tweet Matty. At Matty Stark.
Oh, simple.
Ooh.
It's like you're an Iron Man fan or something.
Maybe.
Next week.
Fuck you, Trevor Slattery.
Next week, we're going to be talking about Thor the Dark World. Oh, God. That's 2 weeks of terrible films. That's been Countdown to Infinity. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Ciao.
podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.